Welcome to Psychologically Speaking, a podcast all about human behaviour, bringing together fascinating research, insights and real life experiences. I'm Leela, psychologist and researcher, and this season we've been exploring goals with our guests. We've heard from 9 people and I've now caught up with everybody who started their goals. And this episode then is a response to some of those replies. And it's 7 ways in which goals get derailed and the psychology that gets us moving again. So goals don't fail, but they do stall. And it's not because you don't care or because you lack discipline or willpower. There's always a good reason why we stall on our goals. And over the last few weeks, I've been collecting the most common phrases people say when goals stop moving. Most of them sound really practical, but underneath they're psychological. So in this episode, I'm going to name 7 very specific goal derailments by name and explain what's really happening under the surface and offer you a psychological reframe for each one. Because I know that understanding these things is often what gets us moving again. So let me introduce all of these 7 derailments. Let's see if you can notice which ones you recognise and also how they show up for you. So the first one is the I don't have time problem. The second one is it's too expensive or the cost objection. The third one is I've lost momentum. The fourth one is the derailment effect or life is lifing or life has happened. The fifth one is the plan is breaking down or this isn't going how I expected. The sixth thing is I'm not enjoying it. And the seventh thing is this is far too hard. And as I say those things out loud, you might react to one or more than the others. And that's usually the one that's been doing most of the work behind the scenes to make you feel uncomfortable or doubtful about your ability to achieve your goal. So before we go any deeper, I just want to say this really clearly. None of these mean that your goal was or is wrong. What they do mean is that your thinking around the goal needs some updating. You need some context and let's have a little reflection on that before you move forward. So I'm going to break down each one and give you a quick psychology explainer. The first one, you don't have time. So this one comes up loads and it sounds really credible, but most of the time, it isn't about time. It's actually about our cognitive capacity and our own quality standards. So the best way to understand this is that perfectionism is the thing that makes our goals run late to schedule. And that's going to happen when you're trying to do everything to a super high quality. The second thing is it's costing you money. And if the cost of moving you in the direction of your big and ambitious goal feels too expensive, it means psychologically you're probably sitting with uncertainty plus this phenomenon of loss aversion. And those things then can cause us to play it safe. The lost momentum myth, because it isn't something you lose permanently. And I want you to think of momentum as something that naturally runs out of puff when conditions change. There's a really good reason it runs out of puff. And I can guarantee you that this momentum is less about you or your willpower, and it is more related to the next issue, which is life is lifing. This is something unexpected happens, and we don't have crystal balls, and it's very unlikely that you have all of the resources to mitigate every conceivable possibility. That's why big corporations employ so many people and take so long to do their stuff. And you're not a big corporation and you've not got a team of hundreds of people. So this is the place where goals get abandoned because we don't adapt quickly enough when life does its thing and we don't have the right resources. Number 5, things aren't going to plan. And when things don't go to plan, we take it really personally. We feel failure. Things like rejection sensitivity and noticing that failure or criticism rather than thinking of it as feedback. Number 6, you're not enjoying it. And this is directly linked to the belief that goals should feel good all the time. They don't. you know, your goal is going to feel hard sometimes. You're going to have bad days, and there are going to be days that you just do not enjoy. So we're going to look at understanding when this happens and when it's a problem and how you can move through it. Number seven is slightly related to that, is your goal feels too hard. When the effort we put in feels really heavy, our brain will start to do this thing of discounting the value of the goal itself, because it's a bit of a danger zone. And it starts to tell us that actually maybe what we're going for might not be worth it. I've definitely encountered this with my PhD. I almost quit because when it happened to me, it sounded like, you don't need a PhD. Who are you trying to prove this to? And you can be successful without a PhD. And of course, all of those things are true. Of course they're true. But that's not the reason I want to do a PhD. So my brain started discounting the wrong things. There are ways to combat these seven derailments. But first, I want to remind you that I'll be using psychology prompts and framing just like these in my goal sprints. And we start on January the 5th. And after a warm-up, we go for 12 weeks. And if you're listening to this and it's after the 5th of January, no problem. You can still join in. I'm recording the workshop, so head to www.leelaange.co.uk, Goal Sprint for details. You're going to have access to a small group. This is a space where you're going to have weekly live calls and access to me. And you're going to have psychological prompts and cheerleading from me to keep your momentum going through the sprint. So, number one, you don't have time. And this one shows up constantly, especially for people who care deeply about quality. So high quality professionals don't usually struggle with effort. That's the easy bit. They're good at the craft. They like enjoy doing what they do. But they struggle with scope creep because it's very much driven by identity. And by that, I mean the bigger the project, the more prestigious the project, the more validating it is around what it is that we can do and what we're trying to tell people we're all about. But I want you to consider that even the smallest action at a high quality is signalling who you are. So if your brain is telling you, if I can't do the whole thing, then it's not worth doing it at all, or I haven't got time to do this as well as I want to do it, then you need to start thinking about the fact that childcare and fragmented days and illness are going to happen. And there will be times when you have to not lower your standards, but lower your output. So instead of pausing entirely, which is what happens when we think we haven't got time to do the thing that we want to do, psychologically, you've got to remember this is identity protection in action. Your brain's going, well, I want to protect who we think we are here, and we're protecting who we're becoming. So find the smallest slice to do that. And this isn't about shrinking your goal. It's about saying, what's the smallest slice of work that still signals who I am at this quality? Same quality, smaller canvas is the way I would reframe that. The second thing is that it's costing you money to pursue your goal. And this one is a tricky one because, you know, finances are very difficult for a lot of people with the cost of living. But psychologically, it's rarely about just finance. It's about this thing called loss aversion. And it's the fact that our brain weighs potential loss more heavily and puts more emphasis on that than potential gain, or gain that we can't see or hasn't become an outcome yet, especially when those outcomes feel really uncertain. So the question underneath this isn't, can I afford this? And what if it doesn't work? It needs to be something more like, what does this investment protect or enable me to do in the long term? And staying stuck also has a cost. So I want you to start thinking about that and perhaps even writing down what staying stuck is going to cost you. Losing momentum. I love this one because people talk about momentum like it's a character trait. You know, some people have lots of momentum, some people don't. But it isn't like that because momentum really is context dependent. When our routines change or energy shifts or life intervenes, momentum naturally falls or speeds up. And psychologically, the mistake is believing that if it's gone, your momentum's disappeared, that you've failed. And really, that isn't what's happening. So a reframe here is that you've got it. It's already there. It just needs restarting. And the good news is that momentum is one of the easiest things to restart because re-entry has been found to be easier to maintain than consistency. And we know this. We know in large-scale habit studies that people who choose goals that allow them to re-enter and are flexible get more success than people who try to stick to rigid consistency. The fourth one is life is lifing. And this feels like it happens to me a lot, but, you know, something does happen and it's usually a curveball and it's unexpected. And what happens there is initially our threat response is triggered and we move into this safety space. So initially it will help us hyper-focus on the here and now, prioritize and do the things that are more central to us and keep us safe. And that's great in the short term. But where this goes wrong for goals is when we don't come out of that narrow focus point. We need to come back out, don't we, and broaden our horizons. But when we're stressed and when we're feeling under threat, our horizons shrink. It's just a natural response. So I want you to just be aware of this. And if you're feeling like something unexpected has happened, and then you're feeling like, wow, I feel like I'm not going for my goal or it's not the right time, I want you to sit with this idea that actually your focus has narrowed. So start looking at what your focus is and bring it out by a step and keep going until you come back out again. And it will happen and you can do it, but it's just a normal process that your brain's going through to keep you safe, basically. Another thing that might help there is to say, you know, what version of my goal fits the reality I'm in now if things have shifted permanently or irreversibly? Remember that flexibility keeps your goals alive. So the fifth thing then, almost this flexibility again, is that things aren't going to plan. And, you know, this is like the breaking news, really. Things never go to plan. I've spent decades project managing big projects and programs. And one thing that I can tell you is that we have this classic planning fallacy because we underestimate complexity all of the time. And the single easiest thing to do when we do that is to blame ourselves for reality. So the reframe here is that plans are just hypothesis. You know, it's just an idea because unless you've actually done something before in exactly the same circumstances, then you don't know how things are going to unfold. And so everything becomes a teaching moment. It's around saying, what is this teaching me right now? What do I now know that I didn't know before? And how do I adjust or course correct? Number six, this is about if you're not enjoying your goal, and this will happen. I think there's a lot out there that encourages us to go for safety, to do things that we love, choose the work we love, especially if you freelance or own your own business. There seems to be this idea that you do the thing you love and you never work a day in your life. But the thing is, if you do the thing that you love, you're going to also not love it some days as well. And psychologically, it's really misleading, isn't it? Because enjoyment and meaning are not the same thing. You can do really meaningful work and not find joy in it. And many meaningful goals involve quite a lot of discomfort, especially when it involves an identity shift. So if your goal this year is about a resolution and it is closely tied to you being or becoming somebody new or different or changed, then instead of asking, am I enjoying this hard change? You might want to ask yourself, what is future me going to thank me for staying with this difficult journey? And also rest in the knowledge that joy often follows commitment. It's not the leader for it. You know, joy can spark an idea or a goal, but it often doesn't set us out on that journey. It's going to come once you've started committing and you're getting through it. The final thing is that goals can feel really tough and really hard. And so you might actually get to the point where you're going, this is too hard. And I want to talk about this because I think out of all of goal derailments, this is the one that I identify with the most. Our brain often jumps straight to the conclusion that when we're finding something really hard, it's wrong. And we might deal with that by saying, well, I don't want to do it, being stubborn. That's definitely where my head goes. But we might also say, well, if it's wrong, we should stop. And again, this is a safety mechanism coming in again. But what's happening here is it's something called an effort discounting that's happening psychologically. And the harder something feels, the less worthwhile it feels in the moment. And so we stall. And not because we can't do it, but because the effort suddenly feels bigger. And the reframe that really matters here is that when something feels hard, it often means that you're in the middle of it and not the end. And these slogs are really transitional, you know? So two things help me when I notice this happening to me. The first is to reconnect with my why, but not in a motivational quote kind of way. I'm not asking what the outcome is. I'm asking, who am I becoming by staying with this? And that really matters. Psychologically, it shifts us from I'm failing to I'm already on the path, or I'll get there, or I'm getting there. If you've ever seen the work of Carol Dweck and the growth mindset, that's very much rooted in that philosophy. The starting is what counts. And the second thing, and this is very much more practical, is to name what is actually hard. So I'm going to give you a real example here. So today I've been sitting on a revision of my ethics form for my PhD, and I have to get approval on this before I can go out and recruit women to take part in the first stage of my PhD. And I'm so close to doing this. All of the prep work's been done. I've passed all my reviews. All the really hard stuff is done. I can now just get on and do the PhD. But I've got loads of edits on this ethics, and I've been telling myself it's too hard. I've got to log into this clunky online system. I've got to go through everything line by line because things have changed. And rather than starting from scratch, I've got to go back and course correct. And I know that a panel is going to be reviewing this work, and their whole job is to look for problems and gaps, right? So if you've ever done ethics, you'll know it always comes back with something, with either revisions or clarifications. And emotionally, for me, that feels like failure before I've even begun. So I'm finding this really tough. Once I'd admitted that to myself by writing it down today as part of this podcast, I told myself that I just needed to take action. And I know that that's the best thing for me to do. So I've gone into an online community and said, right, I need help. I need a body double tomorrow. I need someone to just be online when I'm online so that I'm committed to sitting down and doing this work tomorrow. It's probably going to take me 40 minutes. That's how silly this is. But it is hard. It's a real hard thing. And this is where things can feel really challenging, because we know it might not even be the biggest thing in the world, but it feels like the hardest thing in the world. So the thing that I've done there is to say, yes, I have to do this. It's part of being a good researcher, is just being able to manage all of these small setbacks that are going to happen. But also, I don't have to do this on my own, nor should I do it on my own. And actually, if I just need some moral support, that's what I need. And that is definitely what I need right now. So if something feels too hard right now, pause before you decide it's wrong and ask yourself what is actually hard about it and what kind of support is going to make that doable. Because hard doesn't mean you're failing, and it doesn't mean you're procrastinating. It often means that you're doing something that matters and you're worried about not doing it in the right way. All of these seven things, they are culprits when it comes to us not achieving our goals. But none of these mean that you're bad at goals. They just mean that, one, your identity is probably involved, and your nervous system is also doing exactly what it's supposed to do biologically by responding to perceived threats and uncertainty. And your thinking probably just needs to adapt flexibly to a changing context or circumstances. So these seven things again: if you think you don't have time, or you've got an objection to the cost or a perceived loss, maybe you feel like you've lost momentum, life is lifing, the thing's not going to plan, or you're not enjoying it, or it feels too hard, then I can guarantee that you are definitely on your goal journey. And I want you to come and join my goals friend, because that's a place where we're going to talk very honestly about these seven things and everything that can stop us in our tracks. But my job here this year is to keep you going, is to give you that momentum when you can't find it yourself, and to also help you uncover psychologically what is going on behind your goal ambitions. If this episode resonated, the good news is that you don't have to overhaul everything. Just notice what shows up for you. and you can name it. You can work with your psychology, not against it. That's all for today. Thank you for listening to Psychologically Speaking with me, Leela Ainge. I'm going to be busy recording follow-up episodes with our goal setters, and we're going to be doing some group calls. I'm really looking forward to bringing these episodes back to Psychologically Speaking for you to listen to during January and February. Bye for now.